Evidently, holidays are hardwired into humans. As long as we have been self-aware, we have celebrated fertility rites in the spring, harvest abundance in the fall, and ceremonies tied to the movement of the sun. And at this time of year, most of the cultures that developed in the Northern Hemisphere celebrate light. The days will begin to get longer after December 22nd, the winter solstice. The sun will stay up a little longer each day, even though it's still cold. But in the meantime, we celebrate light in the darkness of these long nights. The Jews light the menorah at Hanukkah. Christians light candles for Christmas, and we deck the halls with strings of lights. I decided months ago to create a series this December called Seasons of Light, to talk about the different ways light is celebrated this time of year and its spiritual meaning. Hanukkah starts today. Next week, we'll talk about Advent and then finally the winter solstice, the day that humans celebrate the assurance that light always returns to us. I had no idea how much we would need light in the darkness today. The shooting in San Bernardino this week was the worst in 3 years in the United States. Because the shooters were Muslim, it's being investigated as an act of terrorism, as if all the other shootings weren't terror. There's a lot of squawking on television and sadness going on, a lot of opinions about whether we need to address guns or mental illness or immigration policies, and an increasing number of countries are going to war against ISIS. So it's been a particularly dark week. We need some light. So, what do we know for sure? We know that darkness cannot overcome infinite love. We know the light of the divine is within each one of us, ready to come forth. And even while we chronicle dark events, more and more people are surrendering to the light, seeking the light and working to bring it into their lives and their worlds. We don't have to take it on faith that light will overcome darkness. We've seen a spiritual awakening going on for decades now, and we are part of it. Always remember, news, by definition, is what's out of the ordinary. Darkness is out of the ordinary. Most of us, billions of us, are fine today, even getting better, waking up to life. So maybe we could reframe this. Maybe we as humans are not doing anything wrong. We are changing and growing dramatically. We're in a state of creative confusion. It's the final stages of giving birth to a new spark of divine light on the earth. The brighter the light, the darker the shadow. The darkness may just be along for the ride to enlightenment. But every Christmas, we reaffirm light. Light born in us and our world through the unwavering presence of the divine. And we're not the only ones. The Jews created a festival of light more than 2,000 years ago called Hanukkah, which means dedication. You might know all about Hanukkah. I had really a fuzzy idea about it, so I looked it up. Let me tell you the story, the stories. So as you know, Israel was a major crossroads, and it was constantly being overrun by conquerors. About 200 years before Jesus, the Syrian Greeks took over Judea, and they Hellenized the culture. They brought Greek customs and especially Greek gods and goddesses. For a while, they just left the Jews alone to keep worshiping as they always had. But a new evil king took over, Antiochus, and decided everyone should worship the Greek gods. He outlawed all Jewish practices. Then he took over the Holy Temple in Jerusalem and built an altar to Zeus inside. Then he began sacrificing pigs on the altar. Pigs in the temple, these are unclean animals. So that did it. There was a Jewish priest named Mattathias who had 5 sons, and they decided to throw out these blasphemers. They formed a band of what we would call insurgents, the Maccabees. and started killing people in power. They fought for 3 years. I couldn't help but notice that these were Middle Easterners killing people who didn't share their beliefs about God. They were a minority even within their own religion. But they won, and winners write the history, so they are considered heroes who stood up for what's right. However, Hanukkah's not really based on this victory over the Syrians. Hanukkah is about the miracle that followed. When the Jews were finally able to get back into the temple in 164 BC, they found it just desecrated. There was Zeus, there were the pigs. So they had to clean it up and then purify it again. One of the things the temple was supposed to have was an eternal flame that would burn all night, every night, to symbolize the presence of God in that place. To light a flame, they burned olive oil in a lamp. But in the temple, the oil had to be consecrated by a priest. They could only find one vial of oil still sealed and consecrated, and that was enough for just one night. But they lit the flame anyway, and miraculously, it kept burning for 8 nights in a row. And that week gave them enough time to go press some more olive oil and replenish the supply. Hanukkah means dedication because they were rededicating the temple. It's a festival of light in the darkness, the return of light after a dark period of history. This is a menorah. You've seen them before. You probably know Jews light one candle on the menorah each evening during Hanukkah until 8 candles are lit. The 9th candle, it's in the middle here, is the attendant or helper candle. You just use that one to light the others. The menorah was never supposed to be used for light inside your home. It's supposed to be outdoors or in a window so passersby can see it and be reminded of the miracle. They say 2 prayers when they light the candles. Blessed are you, Lord our God, King of the universe, who has sanctified us with his commandments and commanded us to kindle the Hanukkah lights. And blessed are you, Lord our God, King of the universe, who performed miracles for our ancestors in those days at this time. There are many things I admire about Jews, and one is that their holidays commemorate the ways they believe God has shown up for all of them throughout their history. They're not worshiping a person as Christians do. They're celebrating who they are and their relationship with God as a community, as a people. So I was thinking, if we did that at Unity of Wimberley, we would probably have an annual holiday to celebrate the miracle of the money. When this church raised $40,000 in 40 days so we could stay on this land. Because, as Leslie Howe always tells us, God wants us to be on this land. Or maybe the miracle of the piano, which was offered as soon as the need for a piano was made known, and the church was able to buy this truly beautiful grand piano for $5,500, which is about a tenth of what they usually cost. I like the idea of remembering the blessings that have happened to the group. I also like that Jewish holidays are observed at home. For the big holidays, something also happens in the synagogues, but Judaism developed as a home-based religion because they just had the one big temple in Jerusalem and nothing else. Most of them couldn't get to the temple often, if ever, so the weekly Sabbath and other ceremonies happened at home. And that served them well throughout history. It helped them hold on to their identity even when they were conquered or exiled. They didn't need a building or a rabbi to express their devotion. They could study on their own too. And that's where the dreidel comes in. When Antiochus, the evil king, banned Judaism, he said anyone caught with a Torah would be executed. But according to legend, young Jewish men would get together to study anyway. So picture them huddled around together to discuss scripture. And if they got caught, they would say, oh, we're just playing with these little tops. We're gambling. It's just a game. This is a dreidel. The words on each side are shin, hey, gimel, nun. They mean a great miracle happened there. If you buy a dreidel in Israel, it says a great miracle happened here. And I won't try to explain the whole game. You spin the top, a word comes up, and that tells you what to do. It's a really simple game. It's usually played with M&Ms or matchsticks or especially those gold-covered chocolate coins. Hanukkah is not a major Jewish holiday. Jews keep working during Hanukkah. The only requirement is to go home and light a candle each evening. But it's gotten a lot bigger just since the 1970s, especially in America. You can imagine the pressure on Jewish parents when all their children's friends are getting trees and gifts and the malls are devoted to Christmas for weeks or months and people are having parties. And so it's not surprising they seized on Hanukkah, their little holiday, and said, we have a holiday too. One of the Jewish websites I found called JewFAQ.org said, it is bitterly ironic that this holiday, which has its roots in a revolution against assimilation and the suppression of the Jewish religion, has become the most assimilated secular holiday on our calendar. But gifts are given to children, usually not major gifts, more like stocking stuffers. But the best part of Hanukkah might be the food. For Jews, this is a holiday of fat and carbs. They're celebrating olive oil after all. So they eat fried foods at Hanukkah. Latkes are fried potato pancakes eaten with applesauce. Bimuelos are fritters. They're fried balls of dough that's been infused with orange juice and then drizzled with honey. And jelly-filled donut holes are part of Hanukkah, too. Sometimes they also eat cheese. So let me tell you the violent story of Judith. They're really not sure when this happened, if ever, but some versions have it during the Maccabean revolt, so it can be part of Hanukkah. One of the towns in Judea came under the thumb of an especially cruel Syrian general. The people who lived there were rebels, and he had trouble subduing them. But the general finally cut off their food and water supply. And it worked. The people of the village were starving, and they were ready to surrender. But a young widow named Judith said, "Let me go see the general." She said, "It wouldn't be the first time God sent salvation through a woman." I love the Jewish stories about strong women. We don't have as many in the New Testament. So Judith put on her best clothes, a veil over her face, took her handmaiden with her, and went to see the general with a basket of bread, cheese, and lots of wine. She slipped into the enemy camp by promising she would divulge information and tell this general how to defeat her town. When she was with him, she fed him her salty goat cheese so he'd be thirsty and drink more wine. And when he finally just passed out drunk, she took his sword and beheaded him. Oh, there's more. She wrapped his head in rags and hid it under her shawl and took it back to her village. She showed it to her commander and said, "Get ready to attack. When they discover their headless general, there will be such chaos, they will run for their lives." And they did. And that's why cheese is sometimes part of Hanukkah. I hear a lot of murmuring out there. Well, there's an even worse story. Yeah. This is the story of Hannah and her seven sons. These stories are not in most editions of the Bible. They're intertestamental, so between testaments. They're called the Apocrypha because they are considered apocryphal. So they didn't make the cut for the official Bible. But you can find them. I have a study Bible that includes the Apocrypha between the Old and New Testaments. Hannah and her seven sons refused to submit to the evil king Antiochus or give up their view of God when the king ordered them to. The sons were tortured and killed, starting with the oldest, one at a time, in specific and gruesome ways, in front of each other, down to the seven-year-old. The king really didn't want to kill this kid, and he said to Hannah, "Can't you persuade him to give in?" So Hannah took the boy aside and pretended to try to convince him. But really, she told him it was an honor to die for God, and he would be rewarded. That's not a new idea. So they went back to the king, and the little boy told him, "I believe in the Torah and in God, whom you blaspheme. You will remain an abomination upon all mankind, loathsome and far from God," which is an incredible vocabulary for a seven-year-old. But the king killed him too. So Hannah, with all seven of her sons dead now, went up onto the roof and threw herself off so she could join them in paradise. They're considered brave martyrs who stood up to persecution in the name of their understanding of God, just as some early Christians did later. And I always wonder when I hear those stories, would I do that? I mean, is there anything you would die for, like Hannah and her sons, or kill for, like Judith, or fight for, like the Maccabees? Maybe to protect your own family, maybe for your country, but for your spiritual beliefs? And is that even a good yardstick to measure our spiritual fitness or level of enlightenment? As long as we are seeking and growing spiritually, our beliefs tend to change anyway. I guess I think of spirituality as such a personal inner journey that it really doesn't matter much what's happening outside of us. No one can change what's going on within. It's like people who say prayer has been outlawed in schools. It hasn't. It just can't be imposed on kids by the administration. But you can't stop someone from praying anyway. How many kids do you think pray silently before a test, or before a game, or before they ask someone out? Nothing can come between us and God, because we're one with God. It's what we're made of. We have direct access 24/7. We're never separate. It's who we are. So what can we learn from Hanukkah? To remember and celebrate God's miracles even from long ago. The strength of spiritual rituals at home with family. But most of all, to affirm there is always light in the darkness. The miracle of the oil lamp reminds us that God is always with us. Turns out, young Jews have a field day with parodies of Hanukkah. YouTube is full of them. So I picked one to summarize this talk, and if you're young enough to know the boy band One Direction, this is even more clever. There we go. Okay. If you like lighting candles, singing flowers, so if you like eating lacquers, playing dreidel too, if you just like getting presents that can fill up your room, this holiday's perfect. This holiday's perfect. So let's start right now.
sleigh than December. Yeah, it's December. Here comes the festival of lights. And it's time to remember. Yeah, to remember. We're lighting candles every night. Let's play Dreidel, Dreidel, Dreidel till we see the sun. Just land on a gimbal and we're having fun. I never, never, never want to shame our none. Tonight let's win some, cause it's Hanukkah. Cause it's Hanukkah. Tonight let's win some.
The Greeks were gone on that night. The Maccabees returned from the fight. But there was only one jug to find to last more than a week. The story.
Shining, burning bright. They remind me of your love and miracles all around.
So let's take these thoughts into meditation. When we meditate, we become still and quiet and turn within. There is a place within each of us where we know that connection with the divine. And nothing can change it. No outside force, no government, no evil king. It's who we are, made in the image and likeness of God and never separate from that presence. Many of us see that presence as a light within. And so in these moments of quiet, get in touch with that light in you. It may be a glowing heart. It might be a pilot light. But it is that divine presence shining in you, through you, and as you. See whether you can turn up the light like a dimmer switch. Keep turning it up higher and higher, until you can feel yourself glowing. This is who you really are. This is what you bring to the earth. You are the light of God. And so in this season of light, we count ourselves among the many lights. Each of us carries a divine flame that will never go out. We're grateful for this awareness. And we move into celebration of these holidays, setting an intention to shine our light. And so it is. Amen.